Hello, Jenny. It's nice to connect with you. You're in a far distant place than where we are, where I am. We have a beautiful day in Ithaca. You may remember we often had bad weather, so it's a nice day here in Ithaca.
Very nice. We have nice weather here too.
So my first question is to tell me about your journey to Cornell and what brought you here. And I remember some of those details. And as you remember from our meetings, like at the Minnesota ASMS meeting, I always loved to ask that question to my past students and postdocs. I've had enough of them, so I kind of forget some of the details, and I'm always very interested in that. And everyone has a story, and I know you have a special story. So tell me about your journey to Cornell and what brought you here.
Yeah, Cornell is one of the most important milestones in my journey of life. Like I told you before, it's a great school and always wanted to go there. I was born and raised in China. There was a lot of pressure for me to excel academically. And because Cornell is a, it's an Ivy League school, there are many excellent academic programs and highly qualified professors like yourself. So it was the first choice for me to go. It was not easy for me to get in. I told you about that before too. And the Cornell culture, I like that too, because it's very open and accepting of foreign students. As an international student at the time, I felt very welcome at Cornell. So Cornell is an obvious choice for me to get into if I get accepted. So with you especially, because I did a lot of research on you, I was trying to get into your group for a long time. So when I finally got in, this is it.
I think I remember you said you read some of the literature or the research we were doing at that time, and that had a special attraction for you.
Yeah, I read quite a few publications of yours while I was working on my graduate work at another school. I did not do a doctor's degree there, but I did a master's degree. And some of the work that overlapped with what you were doing, you had graduate students, you had the postdocs working on something that was similar to what I was doing. So I read some of your publications in reference to help me to do better research on my project. I was very impressed with your work. Also, I read about your students and they were successful academically and professionally. So I was very impressed in both regards. And then I was determined to meet with you, hoping to impress you enough to be accepted as a student of yours. And I don't know if you remember, I called you your office many times to get an interview, but you turned me down every time. My name is Tenacity, so I never gave up. And finally, one day I got a call from you, and that was the turning point in my life. And I dropped everything and arrived at your office.
So, in brief, mention what you were doing at Cornell before we actually connected, before I invited you to my group. You were actually doing something else at Cornell, waiting to enter my group, right?
Yes, when I planned to go to Cornell, I was preparing for it. And so I did the research specifically to find an ideal professor in Cornell, and you were the one. You are the perfect one because you have some work that you did that overlapped with what I did. So I saw a value of my background and saw a match. And I was hoping that you would appreciate what I did. And I think I could probably impress you to get into your group. So I read a lot. I'm a researcher. So I do a lot of research about what you did, what your student did, and what they are doing now, I mean, at that time. And I can see myself going through that path. And so I was pursuing you. I worked very hard.
Okay, I remember you did call or contact me several times. And what did I tell you? It wasn't that I was putting you off. I think I did not have funding. My research group was full in regard to funding them and so forth, and you did need funding. So wasn't that the case that I didn't put you off unnecessarily? I was waiting for the opportunity, correct?
Yes, that's correct. And that's why I never felt discouraged. You were very understanding, and you did not say that don't call me anymore. You just told me you don't have anything open for me.
And this period of time was several months. How long did that happen from the time you first contacted me and then I welcomed you into my research group? How long was that?
Well, it was almost a year.
Oh, really?
It was a long time. Yeah, I was very persistent.
And I might add, you were diplomatically persistent. You were not obnoxious. You were not pushy. You were determined, but you had good interpersonal skills, which is part of your strength, if you will. So, yes.
There is a fine line of being nasty.
Yeah, there is. But you did not go over the line.
No, I think I was almost there because I was a little bit desperate because I don't want to miss the opportunity.
Well, I was initially impressed with you. The only reason I put you off is funding. I had to have funding for you and access to the equipment and so forth. So that was the only reason. And I welcomed and was impressed with your diplomatic persistence. Let's put it that way. You were not pushy.
Well, thank you. What do you remember about me as your student?
I remember a lot about you, and that's all good. And my research group, as you recall, was not large. I think we averaged from 6 to 8, maybe at the most, I think I had 12 people, and I think that was not the case while you were with me. I know some researchers in other universities, and I knew a person at Purdue that had 35 students, postdocs at the same time, and I never had that. That would have been challenging to handle and not give adequate personal attention. I believed, as I think you learned, that I believed in supporting each student I had and give them a chance to be all they can be. So I remember you was very hardworking. Initially, you were a bit quiet, very focused. I would say it wasn't that you didn't fit into the group. You just were focused, if you will, in getting things done. And you were very diligent. You were also very capable. You did capillary electrophoresis mass spectrometry, and that's a nanotechnique that requires a really good hands and really good mind and careful detail to attention. So you were kind of focused like a laser initially. Then as you got accustomed to the environment in my research group, and I don't think you had ever done any mass spectrometry before joining me. Is that true?
That's true.
Yeah, that's right. So you had to learn that. And after you got comfortable with that, the very laser type focus you had, very business-like focus, kind of widened and opened up, and you became a very friendly part of the research group. You got along with others. Remember Robin Shepherd? You were really good friends with her and Habibi and others. So it was a joy to have you in the group because you were very capable in doing what you're doing, but you had a personality and you worked with the group. And sometimes research groups have someone that is so focused and so dominant that they make it miserable for the others. And that was never the case with you. So I always admired that.
Thank you.
So how would you describe within that research group? And you were there, was it under 4 years? Roughly how long?
4 years.
Yeah, that's what I thought. The reason for that is learning mass spectrometry. And that's a mouthful, if you will, to get all that experience. And if you would come in and just continued maybe an extension of what you had done for your master's, you might have had a PhD in 3 years or so. But I think I was never guilty of keeping a student longer than they wanted to be. Some professors do that. You get a really good student, and some professors work them to death to get all they can from. I didn't do that.
That's the difference. Yeah, that's something that I really appreciated, and that made my experience at the Cornell really wonderful. Cornell is not an easy school to get a degree from. So you need a mental and a physical commitment and time management skills. I was like a workaholic. I didn't have any hobbies back then, so that was easy for me to fit in. But you made this experience very interesting too. Your group always have plenty of ongoing projects, very active, you know, some are funded by industry, like a pharmaceutical industry. Some are funded by the government, like my famous LSD project. They are all very interesting. When I talk about those projects and people are just saying, are you sure you did that? That explains some of my mental capacity too. So as a graduate student, I felt like I had to do both the coursework and the projects because your group had so many projects going on and I always have to do the project at the same time as I'm taking classes. So I'm a good student. I want to be a good student in class as well as in the lab. So sometimes it can be stressful managing both exams and the project deadline at the same time. However, you helped me with all that time management, and you taught us how to always create a to-do list and then plan your work, your plan. I mean, that's your favorite. We were joking about that when we were students, but we did it anyway. But now I have the habit of doing that. And even now I'm retired, I still have a to-do list. I do that to manage my calendar and to manage my schedule and to keep myself occupied and also organized. And I start to forget things. And, oh, there is a to-do list. I need to get this done. And I have a schedule. These are the things needs to be done in certain orders. So I'm still very organized. So these are all the skill sets that I learned. The other thing you mentioned is the group. I really enjoy the people in the research group. I met with students and postdocs from all over the world because you were a famous person, I mean, a professor that everybody knows. People drawn to you from all over the world and different industries, and they pay to get to see you and work with you. So just be honest, and I'm a student, and you have to fund my education. I mean, I just felt so lucky to be a student in your group. I learned so much from you as well as the students in the group and postdocs. A lot of those things that I learned is not something that you would ever learn in classroom. And a professor can never teach you about these things. But because I was exposed to all different people and they have different background, that they have some have very interesting stories and personality. So it's just made this experience very rewarding for me.
Do you feel that I treated you any differently, any better or worse than any other students in the group?
You're talking about how you treated me?
Do you feel I treated you special in any way?
No, I didn't feel like that. I think you treat everybody very well. You were strict. You were hard on everybody, and you're trying to get the most out of everybody. I mean, the best description is you treated us like you are dead. We were kids. I mean, we were one-dimensional. I mean, for me, I was one-dimensional. I was a student, and that's all I know is to perform and to get a degree, and hopefully one day I can be successful. That was us at the time, and now I think about it, some of your postdocs, maybe in their 30s, they were still acting like kids. You had to mentor all of us to keep us on the track, on the correct path, and sometimes we still mess up. So I stay in touch with a lot of my former lab mates. We are still close. We visit each other sometimes.
I recall that on your travels, you're now retired and traveling and having a good life, and you have revisited some of these people that you were working with in my group 30 years ago, right?
I stay in touch with them, but visiting them physically is a little difficult because we all live in different towns. So I had to make an effort to see them. But it's very rewarding when I see them. We just felt an instant connection, even though it was 30 years ago, even though we are all older now, much older now. Hopefully we're also more mature now. But it was very nice when we see each other, we like jump up and down. Like my husband would say, we were like high school girls.
Well, I think it's special that you formed those friendships back in your early young days, and you valued it enough to stay in touch with them even now. And that makes me feel good that I had an environment that you were comfortable in and really excelled in, and you did.
Well, I appreciate everything that you did for us. So what is your favorite memory from your time at Cornell?
Well, my academic family, you and the others, the students and postdocs in that research group that existed from about 1980 to 2000, 20 plus years or so. I literally, to this day, I think of you as part of my academic family. And I mean that quite sincerely. The one thing that I know you realize is we were doing novel instrumentation developments. And some of the recognition and attention that we received was because we were doing not high-tech, esoteric, theoretical things. We were doing very practical things. We were developing technology that is, frankly, the standard operating procedures today. Neither of us should take too much credit for it, but the fact is we were developing technology that is now used on planet Earth in analytical laboratories for forensic urine drug testing and for pharmaceutical development and so forth. You were at a point and in a time when we were doing things that attracted a lot of attention, and I received more attention as a professor, as you may recall, visiting pharmaceutical companies and consulting, and I worked very hard to make sure I did not get that out of balance. I didn't want to slight my research group. I had, thanks to you and the rest of the group, a lot of attention because we were doing revolutionary new things, which are now standard, if you will. And so I just feel really privileged and thrilled, and I can't take too much credit for it other than that some of the ideas that I get credit for, students, people like you came up with. To my credit, I didn't get in the way or say that's a stupid idea. I supported it, if you will. And I think one of the keys to research and fun is being open-minded and be willing to take a calculated risk on, you don't know whether something doesn't work unless you try it. And that's what you guys did. I mean, your work with LSD and CEMS was really pioneering. And the other thing that I remember, and to your earlier comments about Cornell, I remain proud to have had the opportunity to be a faculty member, a professor at Cornell. It is a very well-respected university, and I was just proud to be part of it. And a little bit of digression on my part, as you know, I'm an analytical organic chemist. And when I first came to Cornell, it was not as a professor. I was a research associate in the chemistry department, providing mass spectrometry services, and that was my background, and that was my opportunity. But without going into the details, one of my favorite sayings, and is not my sayings, but Yogi Berra, when you come to a fork in a road in your life or your career, take it. It's a really, really sage, you know, what? I come to a fork in the road, tell me which way to go. No, take a chance. My fork in the road at Cornell was I was working with a colleague at the veterinary college. What do I know about veterinary medicine? Virtually nothing. I know about cats and dogs and cows. I brought up on a farm. But after working with him for a year or so, he liked what I was doing and he respected my knowledge of mass spectrometry. And he said, why don't you become a professor at the veterinary college? I said, what? And my colleague said, what do you want to go there for? They will not understand you and you will not understand them. Well, I took that fork in the road. I went the different way, and I just have absolutely no regrets in doing that. As you know, I was doing racehorse drug testing, and LCMS and GCMS at the time was very important there. And so I became a faculty member at the Cornell in an atypical sort of way, and I have just no regrets in doing it. That led to having people like you be in my research group, and all total, I had just about 100 combination students, a mixture of students and postdocs in my career there. And I remain super proud of you and the others that were in this group. It was a wonderful time.
Well, thank you. We are very proud of you too.
So how did your experience at Cornell shape who you are today? And this is an exciting story because you are very, very successful, which you give me more credit than I deserve, but I'm proud to have been part of your success. So tell us what you've done since you left Cornell.
You actually really shaped my life. Cornell is my biggest life shaper, and specifically because of you. You actually changed my life. That day that you said, come in and meet with me, that was my turning point in life. And the rest was history. I mean, I changed my course. Like you said, that you come to a fork, you take it. And then that was how I took it. That was the direction I wanted anyways. So it was great. You were an excellent mentor. And you said you are not a typical professor getting into equine drug testing and veterinary medicine. And I didn't even think about that. I just look at you because you were the one that I was going after. I didn't even think of veterinary medicine at the time because I didn't have any background in that. My bachelor's was in physics.
That's interesting that you say that. I sometimes wondered whether my being, quote, in a veterinary college would deter or discourage a new person like you coming. I never sensed that that happened, but I often wondered what a new candidate like yourself thought about. What, this guy is doing LCMS and CEMS, but he's in the veterinary college? That did not bother you?
No, it did not bother me at all. Actually, I did so much research on you, and I didn't really look at the department. I look at the projects you do and look at what your students are doing at the time when I was looking for a professor. I'm so glad that actually I did not give up on you when you first turned me down. And actually quite a few times you turned me down. And I would not have the opportunity to have you as my mentor and the life now I have if I did not persist. But during those 4 years that I was your graduate student, I learned a lot, not just the things that I learned in the lab. I learned a lot of things that are very practical. Like I said before, some of the things I learned from other graduate students. But by the time when I graduated from Cornell, I was prepared both academically and professionally. I was prepared to be in the real world, like what you told us repeatedly when we were students. This is an artificial world. And when you go into the real world, you are going to defend yourself and you need to have the ability and all those a set of skills, not just academically. You need to arm yourself with all the skills necessary to be successful. And I thought at the time when we graduated from school, we were ready for that as we were. And some of the things I remember that really changed my life, and you might not think it as a big deal, but to me it was. I remember during the first couple of years as a graduate student, I did not understand American culture. I did not know what the Halloween was about. You invited me to your home. You had a gigantic backyard. You took us on a hayride and on Halloween and with your kids. And I remember that because I was a grown-up and I was probably one of the only grown-ups in that hayride wagon. But I was so excited. I was acting like a little kid. And I was so excited. I didn't know what Halloween was about. At that time, I learned about it. And that was a big deal. But I never had it when I was a little kid. That was my experience. And that really changed me because I felt like I was a part of your family because you welcomed me into your family. And this is a family event. And you also invited me to Thanksgiving dinners more than once. And you served me home cooked food Karen prepared. I just felt like you are my mom and dad that I never had. It really made a big impact on me because I was a little girl in China. In that Chinese culture, girls are not valued. I still get emotional when I talk about that. But you made me feel wanted and you welcomed me into your family. I was nobody. I mean, I was an international student. I got nothing and I couldn't even support myself without the scholarship yet that you offered me. So it was such a big deal. I just felt like you are a wonderful person, not just my professor. You genuinely care about your students, with their well-being, not just their academic success. You want them to be a good people. You are trying to raise us like a good kids. So that's how I felt it. That was on the personal level. And then professionally, you also took a genuine interest in me and you invested in my success. You want me to be a successful person overall, not just a successful student and working your lab. I will never forget my first lesson on the art of managing difficult situations. I was in one of those difficult situations during my first 2 years. And I could later see the obvious mistakes I was making. But at the time, I was frustrated and discouraged. And you were very understanding and empathetic. Instead of being critical of me, you used it as an example to teach me how to manage similar situations, as you said, in real world, not in this lab. You told me that I would encounter many, many more similar difficult situations and difficult people after I leave Cornell. And I always remember that. And it was very true because I did experience a lot more difficult situations. But you said, with excellent people skills, you will always succeed. And I remembered all that. And I learned a valuable lesson firsthand. You gave me a book at that time, and I still have it. And I read it so many times, it's completely worn out. And I just remember reading that, I didn't really understand or find it that useful back then. When I was frustrated, I didn't think that I could use those skills, and I didn't relate myself to that. But as I grow older, I start to use a lot of that, and then now it's very natural because people all want respect. I want respect too. So you should treat other people the way you want to be treated. And you definitely don't want to use harsh language to people when you don't have to. But sometimes I still forget. I still need to go back and revisit once in a while. But that was the lesson I learned. And I was very grateful because that was a lesson helped me to be successful dealing with customers, dealing with peers, dealing with anybody, my friends. In my life, I contribute to my success to a great deal to what you did for me. I mean, you did not realize how much you have done for me. It is just your nature. You just want to help your student. But to me, it is a great deal. You went over, compared with other professors, they are most likely just want their students to be a good contributor in the lab. But you want your students to be a good contributor in the society. Be happy, not just contributing. You want us to be happy too.
Do you remember the name of that book?
Yeah, How to Win Friends and Influence People.
Yeah, Dale Carnegie. I remember you read that several times, even while you were with me, and it sounds like you're still reading it. I read that book too. I knew very well what was in it, and I sensed that that would be helpful to you. It wasn't a criticism. It was to show you those important things that so many students and young people do not appreciate how important it is to get along in life with people. In these days, as we know, young people have limited interpersonal skills. That's all through an iPhone or an iPad, if you will. And if you're going to be successful and be successful with people, you need to get along with them. And I think you were a huge success in doing that.
There's still a lot of things I can learn and improve, but that was the lesson I learned. And that was very, very helpful. And I felt like I got a professor that's really interested in my happiness and success and not to just use me to work in the lab. You just stand out.
Well, I know you're very humble and you're also very successful. Would you mind summarizing what you did after you left Cornell and touch upon how very successful you were with your Cornell Foundation?
I wouldn't say I'm super successful, but I did do something that fulfilled my goal. I took a job at 3M, and that was a very good job. I was very happy. Back then, it was 3M Pharmaceuticals.
Didn't they handpick you and bug you because of the work you had done?
Yes, they actually called me rather than I called them. I think they called you, and you said that she might not be interested, and that was... That was true, actually. You never talk with a potential employer. You were not interested. And when I told them that was my boss, when he called me, he said, well, we have this opportunity. And I said, I'm not sure if I should go there for an interview. And he said, you should give us a chance and you should come. So I went and they pretty much offered me a job on the spot. And they said, what else do I want? And so I said, I want to continue to improve myself because the job was a group leader, a management job combined with a technical supervision kind of job. So there is a combination of both technical and management. But I know I'm lacking management background. So I said, I like to get some training in that and said, we are totally fine with that. We'll send you to graduate school if you want to take those classes. So they did all of that. I mean, they were so accepting of me.
And you actually got an MBA at their expense, right?
Yes, I did MBA in marketing and finance. And I don't know if I need them, but I found them very useful. And so because I did all that work and I realized that I'm more suitable to work in the business field than in the technical field. And I thought my supervisor at the time was a little disappointed because I did not want his job after all, after he hired me.
So summarize your next step and the next career that you had.
I worked for 3M for a total of 10 years. I moved around I worked in the pharmaceuticals for 3 years and then global marketing for 3-4 years, I think around that. And then I worked for a 3M subsidiary, that's a medical device company, for another 3-4 years. So a total is 10 years. I was in the global marketing and I was developing a market for them, for their medical products. So at the same time, I was building up my own business. I was always an artist when I was a little girl and I wanted to paint. And during that time, I built up a business that was focused on large format graphics, and it's called the Trade Show Displays. So I built up that business, and over a couple of years, it was growing up so much that I could not handle a job at 3M anymore. So I had to quit my job at 3M. And that was a very difficult decision because I really liked that job. It was very enjoyable and very fulfilling, but I just couldn't do it anymore. I was working like 100 hours a week. I mean, I didn't have any time off. And, you know, when I traveled to Europe, pretty much half of the time I was in Europe because that was my territory. But then I had to come back and work in the hotel. So I don't get sleep. A lot of times I didn't sleep. So it was just too much for me. So I quit the 3M job and worked for my own for quite a while. And then COVID hit and I decided to sell my business.
Very successful. I remember visiting your business. And I think to fast forward towards where you are now, you sold your business and retired fairly recently, and now you're traveling the world, and you were sufficiently successful, you're very successful, and appreciative of Cornell that you made a very generous gift to Cornell. Can you describe that?
One of the reasons I want to do that is to honor you. I wanted the scholarship program in your name. I wanted people to remember that there is a professor there that built up somebody to be successful and have enough money to contribute to an endowment and to Cornell. I just want to honor you. That's one of the reasons to do that. And the other reason is when I came to America, I had nothing with a suitcase and $35 in my pocket. I was struggling. And thanks to all the people that helped me to survive during the first couple of years, that made me a successful person that I am today. So I want to contribute to Cornell program to help those students who need financial support.
I still feel you should receive 100% credit for that. And I don't think it's fair to say I begged you, but I pleaded with you to remove my name because you're the one that did all the work. But you insisted that my name stay on the foundation that you created to support students. In your own words, tell us what the purpose of your gift to Cornell was, is to support a student such as yourself, right?
Yeah, students are similar to myself who are driven but financially poor.
And I think it'd be fun to overview briefly that first student is now funded by you and at Cornell, and tell the recent story about you visiting China and her parents.
I recently visited China, but I thought it would be fun to visit her hometown and meet with her parents. And I want to thank them for raising such a great daughter.
Because we have both met her, right? Yun Ying Sung?
Yeah, we have both met her.
I think that's very special. That must have been a very enjoyable dinner. They took you out to dinner, right? You and your husband?
Yeah, they took me out to dinner. They were wonderful people. I just wanted to meet with them and see how she grow up, just to have a little bit more connection with her.
Well, Jenny, it's just wonderful to review this path that we both shared together. You were a wonderful student. You're a wonderful person. We are still in touch, right? You may be visiting us perhaps in Florida.
I'd like to.
You have visited my home since then and several times, and you're just a special person that I'm so proud of. I did not treat you any differently than anyone else. All the things that you've accomplished, you did with my support, but your effort. It's you, not me. So I really attribute your success to yourself. And I'm so proud and thankful that we've had our time together. It was a serendipity in a way, but it was just fun. When I look back at those days, I'm retired now also, and I miss those days. Our research group had fun. We worked hard. We played hard. and the to-do list you mentioned. Yes, I still do a daily to-do list myself. The efforts on my to-do list are different than they were when I was doing research, and probably you too, but make sure we don't forget something. So with that, do you have any final comments to make before we close?
Well, I'd like to ask one question. If you can tell other students what they should do, what would be your advice?
If I was still having students, you mean?
Yeah, if you can tell any students like me, what would you tell them?
The easy answer is to model themselves after Dr. Jenny Kai. No, to work hard, to enjoy life, work-life balance. I think you've done that too. Yes, at one point you work very, very hard, almost no sleep, and that's over the top. A steady diet of that is not good, but enjoying life, enjoy the journey, and have people skills. Cooperation. I believe in cooperation and collaboration. You may remember that we had a number of collaborations with industry and the U.S. government, of course, interested in funding our research and so forth. So a student needs to be all they can be. That was one of my philosophies, is to not hold down a student, give them direction and give them support, but let them be all they can be. Dream big things. And when you do that, those things can happen. So those are my closing thoughts in a way I always felt about you and the others. We had a fun time. I think there's nothing wrong with working hard and having fun, is there?
Yes. Yes. I had a lot of fun.
All right.